You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal. I'm an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. You are tuning in to the second part of a conversation I had with Danny Anderson and Michael Farmer about country music in the first decade of the 2000s. In the previous episode, we talked about the rise of the internet and the decline of the gatekeepers as technology begins to have a heavy influence on the industry. We talked about the role of women in country music in that first decade of the 21st century. We also talked about specific artists like Toby Keith, Gretchen Wilson, Keith Urban, and Taylor Swift. We return now to the conversation already in progress.
Someone who I think in some ways you could see as the opposite of Taylor Swift, almost like a reaction to Taylor Swift, even though she comes out before her, is Miranda Lambert, who I think her first single was this song in 2005 called Kerosene, which is all about burning down her ex-boyfriend's house. I think in some ways that sets the template for what she's going to be as a star moving forward. There's a kind of vulnerability in Miranda Lambert, but also she's positioning herself as the heiress to Gretchen Wilson. She's this kind of white trash force of nature, although she does it in a way that it's largely not a novelty. I'm not sure Gretchen Wilson really ever made it past novelty status. So I think Miranda Lambert really has some great music, and I think to pop audiences, she's probably best known as the ex-wife of Blake Shelton of The Voice, which is a shame because her music is better and more interesting than Blake Shelton's in every conceivable way. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, she is great. No doubt about it. Yeah. And can I ask a dumb question?
Please.
Is Blake Shelton related to the 80s singer Ricky Van Shelton?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because I always hated him too, but never mind. Go ahead.
I'm looking that up now.
Danny, how could you hate the sexiest man in America?
Ricky Van Shelton? Oh
Blake Shelton.
Him. I have no opinion about
him. He is very handsome. But his music is as generic as it gets, and Miranda Lambert is never generic. So she her music, I don't know if she writes any of it, let alone all of it, but it all feels very personal. It all feels like it's coming from within her, which is what great classic country did too, right? That stuff was always or almost always written by songwriters, and yet somebody like George Jones can sing a song and make it sound like a George Jones song, and Miranda Lambert is that. I really, really like her. And I'm glad to see that despite the kind of travails of female country stars in the 21st century, Miranda Lambert continues to find some success.
And that subject matter is like suited for Loretta Lynn, right? I mean, burning somebody's house down, right? I mean, that's like classic country to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the music is a little rockier than anything Loretta Lynn ever did, except maybe that album she made with Jack White.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you have me talking about Lady Antebellum, who is a kind of we mentioned them earlier. They're a kind of mixed gender pop group that actually began doing background vocals for a Jim Brickman adult contemporary song, and I think really never made it past adult contemporary music. Their big hit was Need You Now.
Picture perfect memories scattered all around the floor. Reaching for the phone, 'cause I can't fight it anymore. And I wonder if I ever cross your mind. For me, it happens all the time. It's a quarter after one. I'm all alone and I need you now. Said I wouldn't call, but I lost all control and I need you now. And I don't know how I can do without.
Which you may remember from, I think it's 2008 or 2009. How to put this without sounding offensive? It is a song for nice Christian housewives who want to walk on the wild side. She says, it's 2 a.m. I think I'm a little drunk and I need you now. And a little drunk is very interesting to me because where somebody like Miranda Lambert would go all out and say she drained a bottle of Jack Daniels, and somebody like country era Taylor Swift would avoid the subject altogether, Lady Antebellum is a little drunk at 2 a.m. But nevertheless, the woman needs you now. I can't believe they got away with that name, Lady Antebellum.
Yeah, I took that to be, when they came out, I took it to be like a not so veiled ripoff of the Dixie Chicks. A
little bit.
Yeah.
But weaker, right? I mean, the Dixie Chicks were really good.
No, that's, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I wanted to add another kind of mixed gender country pop band from that era called Sugarland. And I never liked any of Sugarland's original singles, but they did a really stellar cover of a song by the Dream Academy called Life in a Northern Town. which is one of the greatest songs of the 80s. And they do a really nice job. I remember turning on FM Country Radio in 2008 and hearing that and thinking, who on earth is covering Life in a Northern Town? So I don't really like Sugarland's music either, but if I'm going to pick one of them, it's going to be them over Lady Antebellum just because of Life in a Northern Town. Am I being unfair to Lady Antebellum, Coyle?
No, again, this list is made up of the folks who had the best-selling albums, so I'm with a couple of exceptions, I'm not actually terribly tied to anyone on this list. So if you are, I don't care.
The adult contemporary thing, that was fascinating to me. I didn't know that about them. Jim Brickman was a staple at the PBS station. He's like 3 feet tall. I've been right next to him, but that really fits. I just find it very kind of antiseptic music. But remember when the Civil Wars were really big about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And everyone assumed I should love them. I never could.
I like their first album. I never heard the second one, but there is something very NPR-ish about the Civil Wars. Like the songs were good. But they were polite in a really really aggravating way. That's another group Victoria loves. So when she hears this, if she ever does, she might get angry. let me just say the Civil Wars are about a billion times better than Lady Antebellum.
Oh no, yeah, I'll give you that.
Lady Antebellum is a bad ripoff of the Dixie Chicks. The Civil Wars are like a stepping stone to Gillian Welch.
Yeah.
You know,
fair enough.
If they do nothing else with their career, if they make people appreciate Gillian Welch, I think we can all appreciate the Civil Wars.
Well, anything else on any of those, Michael? Otherwise, I'll talk briefly about who I have.
Go for it.
So Kenny Chesney. Kenny Chesney started in the 90s as a head act, kind of like Toby Keith, but where Toby Keith takes his pivot in the late 90s, Kenny Chesney is a head act in the 90s, and he just never looks back. He's most known for his singles, How Forever Feels, and the one that I knew him from the radio, She Thinks My Tractor is Sexy.
Lordy, here she comes with a basket full of chicken and a big cold jug of sweet tea. Well, I make a little room and she climbs on up. I open up a throttle and stir a little dust. Just look at her face, she ain't a fool in me. She thinks my tractor's sexy. It really turns her on. She's always staring at me while I'm chugging along. She likes the way it's pulling while we're tilling up the land. She's even kind of crazy about my farmer's tan. She's the only one who really understands what gets me. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
I think those songs are about as good as they sound. Do with that what you will. In the early 2000s, he really comes into his own with the album No Shirt, No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems, followed by When the Sun Goes Down, which was a duet with Uncle Cracker, if you need your early 2000s throwback there.
In the sand, cold drink chilling in my right hand. Watching you sleep in the evening light, resting up for a long, long night. 'Cause when the sun goes down, we'll be grooving. When the sun goes down, we're feeling alright. When the sun sinks down over the water, everything gets hotter when the sun goes down, yeah.
carrots, nice and breezy. And sleeping off the night before, 'cause when the sun goes down, we'll be back for more.
When the sun goes down, we'll be grooving.
He's cranked out an album every year for the past 20 years and has done really well with them. I'd started off including him kind of for the same reason Neil McCoy was in our 90s episode, as this example of an average mid-2000s country music. I don't think that's fair, because he really does a lot better than Neil McCoy ever did, certainly in terms of record sales. But he also wins Entertainer of the Year something like four years in a row, 3 years in a row, but then a non-consecutive year in there. He does mature in his music a little bit towards the end of the decade. He starts focusing his music on the South, meaning the Gulf Coast and the Caribbean, so not like rural Alabama, which means his music starts to sound a little Jimmy Buffett-ish, which is not unusual in country. Alan Jackson takes kind of a similar turn for a while in the 2000s also. But Chesney specifically has been using Hemingway as the motivation for his music, which maybe makes it a little more interesting than it was in the 90s, or maybe not. I'm not a huge Hemingway fan.
Can we pause there for a second, Coil, and talk about what a Kenny Chesney song informed by Ernest Hemingway would sound like?
So he has an album called Hemingway's Whiskey that comes out in 2009, and I did not listen to it. So that's my failure as a podcast host. I didn't go back and listen through. I read a couple of articles about it where he was talking about he loves Hemingway. He's always wanted to do something like this. And that album was the result. And that's a failure on my end.
Is there a song about suicide?
I would imagine.
I got to say, though, that's a laudable, whether it's dumb or not. At least he's trying to do something interesting, you know?
I didn't
know that Kenny Chesney had that in him. I have to say.
Well, I think more interesting, because again, I don't like Hemingway. So you can yell, you English profs can yell at me about that later if you want to. In 2008, there's this sort of minor blow up in the country music world. So we'll talk more about the Country Music Awards in general next time, and focus even on one of their sets of awards. But up until 2000, awards were decided by members of the Academy of Country Music, something like 7,000 country music professionals of various sorts who work in the industry, which is how a lot of these award shows work in any case. So a lot of the times when you're seeing awards, it's because there's some group of professionals picking them. So Garth Brooks had the record. He'd won it four times, and he had retired. Chesney had won it three times, 2004, 2006, 2007. And in 2008, that year, they changed the model so that instead of the Academy choosing the various awards, fans were voting online for the winners of the Artist Awards, including Entertainer of the Year. So Chesney won the vote in 2008, tying Garth Brooks for four wins. When he was interviewed about it backstage after the show, he said, and this is a quote, "I've got to choose my words wisely here. I think it's important to know that fans should be part of the awards show. I really do. But I'm probably one of the guys in the audience that didn't think it should be for Entertainer of the Year. The Entertainer of the Year trophy is supposed to represent heart and passion and an amazing amount of sacrifice, commitment, and focus. That's the way Garth won it four times. That's the way I won it. That's the way George Strait won it and Reba and Alabama all those years. I don't think it's right to have the fans choose, but I don't think it's right that they pick the one award that means most, that all the sacrifice, that all the artists sacrifice the most for." He said they changed the category into a sweepstakes to see who can push people's buttons the hardest on the internet. "I don't think that's right, really. I think it's a complete disrespect of the artist, what they've lowered us to get Entertainer of the Year. Because of that, it really diminishes the integrity of the music that we're making and how much work goes into it. That's what really matters. That's what Entertainer of the Year really is. It's not about flying somebody to shows and giving free songs away." As a side note, Rascal Flatts that year gave everyone who voted a free MP3 download back when those were much less common than they are now.
Oh, but then you didn't have to vote for Rascal Flatts song.
Yeah, you didn't have to vote for Rascal Flatts. That would have been against the rules, but you did have to vote. So Chesney goes on, seeing how hard you can push people's buttons on the internet, much as I love the Academy of Music Awards and what they've done for my life, that's how I really feel about it. I can say that because I won tonight, and don't get me wrong, I'm excited the fans have voted me Entertainer of the Year. It means the world. When I go on the road next week, I want to thank them over and over, and tonight on the internet, I'm going to thank them over and over again. But you have to admit, if they the Academy continues to do this, it's a different award. In 2016, the Country Music Awards go back to being voted on by the Academy. Now that Garth is back in the business, he's won three more times and reestablished his record. But he takes a very anti-populist stance in a very public forum. And I think that probably does mean something, although he may just not have known that kind of this wave of populism was coming and that was what the future was going to be. But I think he probably did mean that these awards should have some kind of artistic value. There should be some meaning behind them, other than who can vote. Brad Paisley was interviewed at the same award show, and he said he sees the value of having the awards elected by the fans, but some artists just don't have very well organized fan clubs. So in some ways, it's really putting the people who can organize and promote themselves best ahead of the pack and ignoring, you know, all questions of artistic merit. Anyway, that's Kenny Chesney. He's also married to Renee Zellweger, if that matters, and was once arrested with Tim McGraw for trying to steal a horse in New York.
He was very briefly married to Renee Zellweger. They weren't married for a year.
Yeah. Anything else about Kenny Chesney? Otherwise, like I said, I think the most important thing really is that stand on the Country Music Awards.
Did
my friend who will go nameless on this podcast once got drunk and was complaining about modern country music, and he kept complaining about that little effer in the cowboy hat, and it turned out he was talking about Kenny Chesney, which has colored my vision of Kenny Chesney ever since. It's nobody known to anyone on this network, by the way. I don't want people trying to figure it out.
I'm going to assume it's David Grubbs. Yeah, I'm just filling his name. Carrie Underwood. Everyone knows who Carrie Underwood is. She's not more famous than Taylor Swift now, but she was sort of the Taylor Swift of the pre-Taylor Swift era. Her career starts actually with a contract with Capitol Records in Nashville in 1996 when she was 14. The company changed management, canceled her contract, so instead she went to college and then on to American Idol, where she became nationally famous and had got Simon Cowell to say,
"I will make a prediction. Not only will you win this show, you will sell more records than any other previous Idol winner."
Which turned out to be right. Her first album after American Idol was Some Hearts. It broke all sorts of records, as did her first single, Inside Your Heaven, which hit number one on the pop charts in 2005, but not the country charts. Jesus Take the Wheel the next year would hit the top of both.
Driving last Friday on her way to Cincinnati on a snow-white Christmas Eve. Going home to see her mama and her daddy with the baby in the back seat. 50 miles to go and she was running low on faith and gasoline. It'd been a long, hard year. She had a lot on her mind and she didn't pay attention. She was going away too fast. Before she knew it, she was spinning on a thin black sheet of glass. She saw both her lives flash before her eyes. She didn't even have time to cry. She was so scared. She threw her hands up in the air. Jesus, take the
And I'm sort of curious, do you guys hate that song, Jesus Take the Wheel, just as much as I do, or am I alone in that?
No, I hate it.
Okay, good. And it's nothing against Carrie Underwood's like musical talent. Like, she's obviously a phenomenal singer who can cover, you know, a whole spectrum of genres, but man, that's an awful song.
I think there's a theme here though about talent and meaningful art, right? and how they're not necessarily connected. And so, yeah.
Well, and she is incredibly talented, but she is also a sign of this changing technological world, right? She comes to stardom, even in country music, even in a genre that's still dominated by the radio, in a way that doesn't involve Nashville, right? She comes in kind of through the back door and through television of all places, and is voted into stardom. Well deserved, right? Again, she's obviously phenomenally talented. She is certainly the biggest female name in country music today, and has released this massive, massive stream of hits that is just ongoing. I don't really listen to her, so I don't have a whole lot else to say. You guys have anything to add about Carrie Underwood?
Before He Cheats is a really amazing song.
Right now, he's probably slow dancing with a bleach blonde tramp, and she's probably getting thirsty. Right now, he's probably buying her some fruity little drink, 'cause she can't shoot whiskey. Right now, he's probably up behind her with a blue stick, showing her how to shoot a combo, and he don't know.
I think that was the follow-up to Jesus Take the Wheel. That's another, like...
It was.
I'm going to destroy...
It was the other one that hit number one in both country and pop.
I'm going to destroy the property of my ex-boyfriend, but she delivers it really well, and it's a well-written song, so...
Right, and she doesn't have the persona of someone who would actually do that.
No, it was very against brand for her, although it was still early, so I don't know that she really had the persona totally lined up yet. But yeah, her persona is usually right. Someone who's a little sweeter.
one more person to talk about, Brad Paisley. If we're the sorts of people who complain about modern country music, I think Brad Paisley might be the sort of bright spot here in what might be a dark era. He's intentionally modeled himself on Buck Owens, but he also has cited Eric Clapton and Huey Lewis as inspirations, which I think makes kind of an interesting combination of sounds. He has recorded with just everyone. He's covered multiple genres, so again, there's that theme of incredibly, incredibly talented individuals. He's recorded with B.B. King, The Rolling Stones, Alison Krauss, Jewel, and my favorite of these, in terms of personalities, LL Cool J. I won't say it's my favorite song. That he recorded with LL Cool J a song called Accidental Racist.
They called it Reconstruction. Fixed the buildings, dried some tears. We're still sifting through the rubble after 150 years. I'll try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. It ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin, 'cause I'm a white man living in the Southland. Just like you, I'm more than what you see. I'm proud of everything we've done, and it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start this nation, but we're still paying for the mistakes that a bunch of folks made long before we came and caught somewhere between Southern pride. Southern Blame.
Dear Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me, I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hoods. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag and I think you wish I wasn't here.
Which was very well intentioned, and it intended to talk about sort of the history of racism in the South, the legacy of Jim Crow, what it's like to be a white Southerner and try to navigate, you know, a white Southerner who doesn't want to be racist. It also tries to reappropriate the Confederate flag, which, you know, many people think is bad, and as a Westerner, I am just mostly indifferent to, because all you Easterners are nuts.
At one point in that song, LL Cool J says, "If you'll ignore my gold chains, I'll forgive the iron chains."
Yeah. And at one point he says, if you, I'm going to butcher the rhyme, if you ignore my do-rag, I'll ignore your red flag.
Red flag indeed.
Yeah. Again, the fact that he recorded it, I think, is interesting in and of itself. He also played at Barack Obama's inauguration, I think twice. I don't know if he did both of them, or he certainly did one of them. He is clearly the most positive, you know, person in country music. He loves everyone and everything. He will basically reference and nod everything he possibly can. His music videos are almost always phenomenal. He's got one called Celebrity. It features Little Jimmy Dickens, Jason Alexander, and William Shatner.
I've always wanted to be a singer. I'm ready. I've been practicing. Can't really quit my job at the Dairy Queen right now. I have to sing. America, here I come.
Someday I'm gonna be famous. Do I have talent? Well, no. These days you don't really need it, thanks to reality shows. Can't wait to date a supermodel, can't wait to sue my dad. Can't wait to wreck a Ferrari, on my way to rehab. 'Cause when you're a celebrity, it's adios reality. They say I've gone insane, I blame it on the fame, the pressures that go with being a celebrity.
And it is fantastic. And his novelty songs are really, really well done. So he's got one about how his wife gives him an ultimatum of, if you go fishing one more time, I'm going to leave you. And the name of the song is I'm going to Miss Her.
Well, I love her, but I love to fish. I spend all day out on this lake, and hell is all I catch. But today she met me at the door, said I would have to choose. If I hit that fishing hole today, she'd be packing all her things and she'd be gone by noon. Well, I'm gonna miss her when I get home. Right now I'm on this lake shore and I'm sitting in the sun. I'm sure it'll hit me when I walk through that door tonight.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss her. Oh, looky there, I've got a bite.
And then he's got one about alcohol that's really good. Yeah.
I can make anybody pretty. I can make you believe any lie. I can make you pick a fight with somebody twice your size. Well, I've been known to cause a few breakups, and I've been known to cause a few births. I can make you new friends or get you fired from work. And since the day I left Milwaukee, Lynchburg and Bordeaux, friends been making the bars lots of big money and helping white people dance. Got you in trouble in high school, but college now, that was a ball. You had some of the best times you'll never remember with me. Alcohol, alcohol.
I mean, it is. And even like his serious songs are good. His kind of homage songs are good. He's got one called Old Alabama.
She'd rather wear a pair of cut off jeans than a fancy evening dress. And with her windows rolled down and her hair blown all around, well, she's a hot southern mess. She'll take a beer over white wine.
That's about growing up listening to Alabama, which again, the music video is fantastic. It's him and Jeff Gordon. And he's like telling Jeff Gordon, you know, I used to be part of the band Alabama. Jeff Gordon's like, what were you, 10? He's like, yeah, that's right. So again, he's a phenomenal entertainer.
He's a stellar guitar player too.
Yeah,
he is. And I think probably not acknowledged enough for that. Anything you guys want to add about Brad Paisley?
He's married to Kimberly Williams from Father of the Bride.
I don't know that I knew that.
He went on a date to see Father of the Bride when he was a kid, and the girl left him for his best friend, and then he married the girl from Father of the Bride.
It's kind of a Marty Stewart of a story.
How do you like me now?
Well, I want to, before we get to the two topics, and we'll hopefully not have to rush this too much, but I want to push back a little bit about all the hatred we've been giving for early 2000s country. So in today's episode, we've said it's urban, it's slick, it's this sense of oppression by the cities and the wealthy. It's full of exuberant consumerism. Isn't it possible that all of that is just something that's true about rural America, and we don't like rural America? Are we being sort of intellectual snobs here and saying, you bunch of rednecks just don't know what's good for
you? I live in rural Pennsylvania, and I like rural Pennsylvania. I don't like the music that people listen to in rural Pennsylvania. I don't know.
But are you saying it's not actually a reflection of it?
I have very I don't know that I can straighten out my thoughts to explain. I have more of a sense about why this is not good, but I feel like it's a gesture towards an identity rather than an identity. Like I'll have to like formulate my thoughts more clearly because I can't really put it into words right now.
Well, you get that in a really serious way in the 2010s, right? With bro country.
Yeah.
Bro country is right. Just nothing but a gesture at an identity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just sort of like this, it's something you go to buy at Walmart and you wear, and that's the depth of meaning that it has.
But what defines rural America more than that, Danny?
Than Walmart? Maybe.
What do people wear in your part of rural America?
I don't know. Yeah, it's Walmart's big, no doubt about it. And so, yeah. But I don't know. But there's a difference between grappling with that and just sort of like celebrating it, you know what I mean, as something natural. And so, yeah, I just feel like there's some – I don't know. It has to do with consumerism and postmodernism and the kind of formation of identity and that I can't put it all into words. But yeah, I'm grasping at intellectual thoughts here that I can't quite formulate. But
no, and I sprung the question on you because I thought of it while we were getting ready to record.
We also already had this argument, Coyle, about whether whether country radio is genuinely populist or whether it's a kind of faux populism fed by the suits.
Yeah, and it's both. You guys haven't talked me out of that. I'm still a believer in the feedback loop, right? It's they play what people want to hear, and people want to hear what they play. Like it is both sides of that.
And yet we regulate pornography. And so
well, we used to
kind of, we do
the internet's gotten rid of that. Well, folks, I realize that Danny Anderson talking about regulating pornography is an odd place to stop. Yet once again, we find ourselves with an extra long episode that needs to be broken up just for the sake of keeping things manageable. So tune in next time for the exciting conclusion of our conversation about country music in the early 2000s, including some discussions of politics and some of the major issues going on with country music in that decade. Thank you once again for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's and render unto God those things that are God.
This is the last cowboy song. The end of 100 year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing long. Another piece of America's lost.